then, of course, we are in a much better way to reviving the economy than we just hand out, if we give them handouts. Mm-hmm. Including their
business. Yes. And talking about the small business, Peter, you know, the previous president who lost now, John Dramani Mahama, was associated with with power cuts. And to succeed in small businesses, one of the other things people need is electricity. They need power. They need infrastructure, including roads and bridges. In your talking to people moving around this time, how do people feel about their availability of this, their availability of electricity, and also that of infrastructure that facilitates the businesses that they're engaging in, especially the small businesses?
Well, Vincent, a lot of people are attesting to the fact that the rate at which power was cut in the few years ago, it's not at us at the moment. Now, this is because there's an argument between the two main parties. John Dramani Mahama's party says that we resolve this problem of power cut or power rationing or doom so, whichever way you want to call it, before we left power. However, the present government said we are the ones that did it. Now, the accusations have been going back and forth, and the claims have been going back and forth as to who actually solved it. The clear case is that a lot of Ghanaians are enjoying uninterrupted power supply for quite some time now. Businesses that I spoke with, officials who have businesses and market women that I spoke with, are seeing some improvement in the way power is running at the moment. However, the power companies, the distributing power companies, are expressing concern that they are owed $1 billion or so dollars worth of debt that the state has yet to defray. So some time ago, they threatened to cut the power off. I don't know what happened, but it's quiet now. The clear case is that a lot of Ghanaians are enjoying power at the moment. Now, it did not get worse when the president gave them free electricity, free water. However, you know, as Professor Nyoma said, the debt will come and you have to defray the cost. So that is what the government has to resolve at the moment. But so far, so good. It appears that both administrations made efforts to try to resolve some of these problems because it was adversely affecting businesses across the nation. Yeah. Now things seem to be improving quite a bit.
Yes, Professor Norma, I mean, it's inevitable we still have to talk about what the leaders, whoever's been elected like President Akufo-Addo, has to do in all sectors. Now, if you turn to agriculture, for example, Ghana, I think about 60% of Ghanaians are engaged in agriculture. The economy, in as much as there's production of diamond, gold and oil, is to a large extent, it is agri-based. But there is evidence that agricultural productivity has been going down a little bit, has weakened, could be because of climate issues, could be because some more rural people are moving to the urban areas. Urbanization is impacting serious agriculture. How do you help inspire the growth of agriculture? How do you maintain people on their farms and make sure that the agricultural sector is vibrant and it can continue powering the economy of the country?
Very good question. So the problem with agriculture is not the fact that a lot of our people are doing agriculture. It's the type of agriculture that we do. It's mostly subsistence agriculture. So people are stuck in a poverty cycle, using small plots of land, doing mixed cropping. They don't make any money. They just feed themselves. And that's not how a country develops. If you want to revitalize the agricultural sector, you need to look deeper. You need to look into things like land tenure reforms. A lot of peasants don't own land in Ghana, and so they cannot use ownership of land as collateral to get any loan from a bank to scale up their business. You have to give people a chance to go beyond feeding their families. We have to introduce cash crops, not just cocoa And the government has been doing some of that, so I want to give them credit for that. But we need to let people understand that to be successful in agriculture, you have to go beyond growing food that you can eat. Globalization has brought a lot of challenges, but it's also given us opportunities. People need to take advantage of that market beyond Ghana. Government is going to have to help. We got to think about supply chain management, because if you're growing tomatoes for exports and you are in Bulga, there has to be a system that allows you to ship your stuff safely. That we have to give credit to farmers. But more importantly, I think land ownership is one of the things that we're going to have to look into and figure out a way of providing some type of security for our people. And there are too many Ghanaians in the informal sector. We have to figure out a way of moving people out of that sector. It's about 70 to 80% of our people. The labor force is stuck in the informal sector. And I don't want to say the informal sector is unproductive, but the wages there are extremely low. And the other thing is that they don't pay taxes. I just saw a report from the Commissioner of Revenue, and it's talking about up 2% of people in the informal sector pay taxes. You cannot develop that way. And so we need to figure out how to create incentives for people who are in the informal sector to scale up, and how to get many more people to participate in the more profitable formal sector so the government can tax them. And people need to understand that if they want good things, they have to pay taxes. People go to hospital in Ghana, for example, and they expect things to be free. But when they go see a juju man or they go see a pastor, they don't expect that service to be rendered free of charge. Yeah. So people need to understand that development requires everybody pitching in. It's not just the government. It's all of us.
Yeah, they did. And those who are in the informal sector also, in as much as they want to pay tax, they should pay taxes. They also want to see that there's some gain. They need to see some benefits from their taxes so that they can succeed in their businesses. Now, Clara, you have experience in law. In terms of, the agriculture sector, just survival generally, what are some of the legal bottlenecks that Ghanaians have to deal with? And what should legislators in the parliament do to make sure that they make it easier for Ghanaians to own land, to own property, and to participate in the economy at whatever level?
When it comes to agriculture, in terms of the law, it's not the problem with ownership is not in the law. The law is pretty straightforward and clear on how land ownership is. It's more the practicality of the way our institutions work. So it's when we come to implementation, that's where the problem is. Now, when it comes to those in Agri, for example, their biggest problem are the simple issues like roads. So even if they have a big farm, after they get a big harvest, how do they transport their produce from their farms onto a place they can sell? There are no roads. How do they access the roads? Storage facilities. So these are some of the basic issues that farmers have. The credit of the Ghanaian farmer, if you look at the history of that, people really farmed at some point when it was much easier to export. So some of these issues have to do more with the facilities, access to roads, access to water. A lot of them rely on rain. On rain-fed agriculture, they have irrigation facilities, for example. So when it comes to agriculture, we need to concentrate a lot more on providing access to water, for example, so irrigation dams and the roads and storage facilities. And then we can also now take a look at our exports to see how we can help farmers to export some of their produce. Of course, it's not just when it comes to export. What about our laws? Because then they also have to look at the laws of the country into which they are exporting and whether or not their produce meets the required standard and all of that. But I think if we tackle the basics, which is I mentioned earlier, we are on a better foot. And when it comes to tax, to be fair to the Ghanaian people, I don't think the Ghanaian people have a problem with paying taxes. It's part of the problem is how difficult we make it for them to pay tax. And then the other issue you mentioned earlier on, which is the ethics of taxation, how they see their tax money being used, or whether they see that they benefit from the taxes they pay. So to a very large extent, I see the Ghanaian people as people who are willing to cooperate. It's always shown, right, even from colonial, they've always had an invested interest in the way the affairs of the country are run. And when it is their turn to do their job, they do it. Yeah. So we should go back and look at how we can provide them the right facilities and aid them in the right legislation. To a very large extent, mm-hmm. on the legislation angle, we are not doing badly. Yeah. We have some of the most beautiful laws anywhere in the world. Our biggest problem is implementation.
Thank you. And those are some very common problems across Africa, in fact. Peter, you know, Clara has mentioned, of course, the issue of infrastructure, especially in the countryside. You've covered Ghana quite a bit. When it comes to the issues of implementing projects that, give people the necessary infrastructure they need in order to prosper, question is, do you see these issues? Did you see them as part of what the electorate wanted to hear from those who are seeking office? Are they seriously discussing these issues, or were they caught up in the high kind of minded kind of thoughts about, the economy and $17 billion program, revitalization, but never really took these leaders into task over this very mundane but very, very necessary things of life?
Well, Lisa, let me answer it this way. There have been instances of two parliamentarians or two constituencies in this country, Lejekuku constituency and Adenta here in Accra. Now, these constituencies have kicked out their parliamentarians every 4 years. They demand accountability. When you tell them that you are going to do something, you better do it, else they will kick you out. Now, the Adenta constituency, the man they kicked out was the communications director for the ruling New Patriotic Party. Now, the other one who was kicked out from Lejekuku is Dr. Okoboy, who is a medical doctor, but he is the deputy information minister. Now, Ghanaians are now demanding that if you make promises, you better keep them. Now, when I went around talking to people yesterday, they said the free senior high school education that a president promised before coming to power and implemented was one of the key reasons why they gave him the mandate for an additional 4 years to do more. Now, so they are pretty much holding the feet of these politicians to the fire, that you don't come to make grandiose claims and promises if you don't have what it takes to implement them. You better be serious, because they are aware. I remember in 1992, after Ghana decided to re-embrace the constitutional rule, because of the charm offensive of then the man who has been in power for 10 years at the time, Jerry John Rawlings, who just passed away, he was attractive enough, he won. But then President Kufuor, at that time, an opposition leader, was very strategic in the promises that he made. Now, I spoke with him a few days ago, and he was talking about the strategy that he had to implement because things were not working. The police did not have the things they need to enforce the law. The borders were porous. People were smuggling things everywhere. The city had crashed. So they had to develop a strategy to revive the economy, to focus on partnering with businesses to encourage them to flourish and to create the necessary environment for them to flourish. So some of these issues, when you go around talking to people, they will tell you how comfortable they were with President Kufuor, and that is why they gave him a second 4-year mandate to carry out or finish what he had started. Now, they have done a similar thing to President-elect Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo. It remains to be seen if the promises he made to do more to transform the lives of people, to create jobs for the youth, will materialize. Ghanaians, as I went in the street last night and since I have been here, they are saying, if you make a promise, you better keep it, else they will kick you out.
Well, and that is really how things are supposed to be, because the citizens, the voters, are the employers of these politicians. Professor Nuoma, for a country like Ghana and any other African country, really, to develop, to have good governance, would it be because of goodwill of the leaders or institutions, or the enlightenment of the masses that would, as we, as Peter just said, put the feet of the leaders into the fire to make sure they perform? What will it be?
I would say all of that, Bev, with a caveat. Politicians don't do good on a morality basis. So you got to give them an incentive to do the right thing. But a little bit of political will goes a long way. If the leaders really, really, really care about change, as they do about winning power, we can start making progress. But the people have to hold leaders accountable. And I'm very happy that Peter was talking about the ministers and the big people that lost elections. In this election, this vote, 6 sitting ministers were voted out. 14 deputy ministers were also voted out. So for the first time, we're seeing Ghanaians are saying to people, it's not good enough that you are a minister. You have to show us the results. We want to see the receipts of the work. In the past, it was okay. You could win an election simply because you were a big man and people were happy to be from the same town as the big man. It's not enough anymore. But people have to understand that governments will not do what they need to do unless they hold them accountable. That means that occasionally you have to vote against a party that you voted for your whole life. I'm from Kibi, the hometown of the president, and I talk to my cousins, my relatives all the time. They are not happy with a whole lot of stuff. And I ask them, are you willing to consider voting against him? Are you willing to vote for the other party to send a message? And nobody, people are like, no, I can't see myself doing that. If you can't see yourself doing that, the politicians will take you for granted and they won't do anything. You have to be willing to withhold your support when they don't do what they said they're going to do, and then they have to earn your trust. And I think that once they learn that, because these are smart guys, if they know that the way they win power is by delivering services and it's not good enough to just villainize the other party, they're going to deliver. I want to see them try. I'm not saying that it's going to solve all problems, but I want to see the effort. I haven't seen seriousness in Ghana in a long time. I haven't seen new thinking, new energy behind this stuff. It's as if we get satisfied because foreigners are praising us. Everywhere you go, Ghana is prospering. Ghana's democracy is this. People are poor in Ghana. People are poor. People are dying after this election. Why should you die? Simply because you want to vote. And so that fake praise goes into the heads of our people, and they point to statistics generated by outsiders who don't have to live in a country where there is no water, where people can't get jobs, and people have to pay, you know, high costs for bad health care. Then people don't live in these places. So the people that live there that know what's happening, they need to hold governments accountable, and governments have to listen. But if you don't hold them accountable, you're probably not going to get anything from them.
And you know, some of the praise comes in relative terms, right? Comparing Ghana to the neighboring countries and how they performed, especially around election time. Clara, in fact, do you see the danger of complacency, the danger of maybe setting the bar very low just because some of the neighbors are even in more chaotic situation than you are? Is that possibly a problem in Ghana?
It's a problem just for the political elite. To a very large extent, Ghanaians are not that complacent. Yes, we hear that, but like Professor Nyema noted, a large section of Ghanaians see it as fake praise because they also see the problems that they have with day in and day out. So Ghanaians in themselves are not complacent. And to a very large extent, what the particular election has shown is that voter is gradually rising up to holding their various parties accountable in terms of what they do. And of course, tracing from our country and then tying up generally to other African countries. Politics was not so much the link from identity, which then meant that some people voted for their political party, whether or not they just felt they owe an obligation to keep a certain political party in power based more on identity and tracing more to history rather than what the party is delivering. But we are seeing now, gradually, parties are being held, even being asked for their identities. So people are now moving away from that trend aren't starting to hold their political parties accountable with respect to voting, at least, which is a good sign, which, and look, yes, there were allegations, I'm sure you would have heard of vote by, but in many instances, it did not, the money did not influence some of the voters. So you can see that voters are moving away mm-hmm. and gradually exercising the power that they have when it comes to voting. The next thing that we have to look at is how them is before the election. So after the election, how do we still keep, how do we still hold our leaders accountable even before election time? And that is where we have a lot more work to do.
Yes.
And that effectively, I keep saying we have to go back to our constitution.
Mm-hmm. And Peter, you know, you and I have interacted with so many politicians. We know that during the campaign time, they go down to the villages, to the neighborhoods, the slums, and whatever, to beg for the votes. After they have been elected, they become the big man who are not approachable, not reachable. Question is, have you, in your observation lately, seen that Ghanaian politicians, elected officials, are realizing that they're actually servants of the people and not masters of the people, not big men, but servants?
Well, Vincent, you are right by that. People that I spoke with were telling me the ministers and deputy ministers losing their parliamentary seats since a very strong signal to these politicians that you either come back to listen to us, to address some of the concerns we have, to have development in their area, else we kick you out. I mean, it was a common refrain among a lot of people, including supporters of the ruling party. So it's not only that some of the opposition, you know, supporters are crying foul, but even the ruling party supporters are saying that, look, now we don't care. If you don't bring development to our area, why should we keep you in office? The other thing, too, is that they think that if the president and the parliamentarian representing them come from the same party, perhaps they could be able to lobby development to come to their area. However, this was not a reflection of what happened just a few days ago. They're saying if you are a parliamentarian, they give you what you call a development fund from parliament to help you, you know, create some form of project in your area. Sometimes the parliamentarians mm-hmm. are able to lobby some big, big project to come to their constituencies. Yeah. Like, for example, in the Ododo-Diodo constituency, they had the market there being renovated and being rebuilt. You had a boxing arena. You know, the people there like boxing, so they had a boxing arena. And then you have a lot of development. Others are not enjoying that. So either show up or show out.
Exactly. In about 30 seconds, Professor Nuoma, what do you see happening now in Ghana in the next few years as Ghana moves on in this trajectory of, you know, a very celebrated democracy?
I think the president said, give me 4 more years to do more for you. I think Ghanaians should take him at his word and demand that he does more for them. If not, then his party is probably going to pay the price in the next election. And I like the fact that Ghanaians are beginning to take that responsibility seriously. For the opposition has made significant gains in parliament. I hope that they turn that into an invitation to participate in the serious governance business that has to be done.
All right.
Because they are auditioning for the presidency next time.
Thank you for the last word there. And on that note, I want to thank Peter Kloti, Clara Berry Kasati, and Kwaku Nuoma for joining me on Straight Talk Africa. Have a good evening.